Log Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Happy Tuesday, everybody. We've made it to the second day of the new week. Thanking God for another day of being here. I want to say thank you to my team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Nevis, DJ Domrica, Rodney Williams, Monster Miles, and, of course, that activist and panelist out there in Toledo, Ohio, Deacon Betty Williams, doing his thing here off the air and where he's at. To Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 KISS FM Radio, currently with iPhoneRadio.com. You can hear Barry do his thing Saturday nights from 7 to 10 p.m. and again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. And when he's not doing that, he's bringing you the best of live R&B events all over New York City as the CEO of that awesome company, Track One Entertainment. Okay, I want to thank my starting panelists, Darlene and Arlene, my favorite twins, Taylor Jenkins, my favorite youth advisor, Professor Carlton Jones, Patrick Irvine, Alfred Atkins, Deacon Betty Williams, a few of you that have been joining in lately. I want to thank you all very much for your off and on the air contributions to my social media group, my On the Edge Listeners Lounge. Mark Pittman, tonight's sponsor, who we also thank, and his two groups, Real World Black News and Discussions and the Black History Suppressed Group, Linda Miller with the Black Level Conversations Group, Marvin Young with the Capitalist End Group, Professor Jones with the What About Us Group, and our latest and newest addition to the social media network is Patrick Irvine and the Urban Intellectuals Open Discussions Group. You guys have been fantastic and marvelous. Oh, and let me not forget Sonny Gibson and the Black Mamba Group. You guys have all been really, really keeping me on my toes with the thoughts and feedback from the communities around the nation, I should say, because all of you are in different parts. Well, tonight, everybody, we are going to be speaking on something else regarding our children. It's sort of going to be a little bit of a mix of something touching from relationship chronicles to our parenting chronicles to our chronicles. And we're going to get out there to start speaking about one particular thing that all three are mixed into. Before I do that, please let me let you know that if you are in the Toledo, Ohio area, please check out 93.1 Jam Packed Radio, because that is our sister terrestrial station out in the east. And we will be syndicated every Sunday from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Also, take a listen out to us on Wednesday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the web. And if you are in certain areas, we have 5 terrestrial sister stations through this network, the AMFM247.com website. So, getting us on to our topic for tonight. We're going to be speaking on the topic, parenting in the new relationship, being a village beyond our fears. Now, we have touched on quite a couple of things in these past three segments where we, and of course with all of our segments where we speak on definitely our African American communities, you know, debilitating fear of white society and how it is that we stop doing for ourselves and we turn on ourselves in order to make things not happen for us, I guess. Well, today we're going to be speaking about when you are in a new relationship and you notice that your significant other's child is involved with activity that their parent may not be aware of. What do you do? Do you approach the parent? Do you approach the child and not say anything to the parent as an effort to try to reach out to that child? Or do you do both? And if you know that your parent, the parent may be unreceptive to the fact that their child might be in some problems, do you back off of that? Do you leave the child alone? Do you leave it for the parent to handle, especially if the parent is working certain type of hours and don't really know? Or do you step up and be a village beyond the fears of what's to come, the fears of the village itself on the outside and the fears of who you're dealing with, per se? So that's the question that we're going to ask tonight. You know how this goes. We're going to go out with our pre-broadcast discussion. When we get back, we will continue this on afterwards from our artists and our sponsors. So don't go away, guys. Keep it right here.
Like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything straightened away. driving violations, personal injury, drug charges. He's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, Attorneys at Law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, The New Yorker, to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett, and now we are going to get into our discussion, everyone. Okay, we're going to be speaking tonight from the angle of parenting when you're in a new relationship, meaning co-parenting, either one or both of you have children. You're coming in together, as, like I said, it's either one of you or both of you that have children, and one of you or the other of you have seen something in the child. One of the things that we speak on quite often as to one of the things, as to one of the many things we do to ourselves is, for today's youth, we sort of put up barriers that really need to be open doors to help our children. We put up blinders with certain things. So with the blinders, then the barriers, then we have the cycle of don't tell my child nothing. Oh, don't tell me nothing about my child. What you doing? Oh, I'm dealing with my kid. This is the problem. We grew up having neighbors, storekeepers, shopkeepers, teachers, priests, people in church, just neighbors of neighbors and friends of friends who pretty much watched everything and everyone in the neighborhood. We may not have liked nosy Mrs. Jones, but Mrs. Jones was in that window watching. And we knew that if one adult told another adult, which told our parents, we weren't going to get away with very much, or we were going to be able to talk about something that happened and be able to give our parents that proper shot at balancing out who was lying on us or really what was an actual valid point. When you are involved with another person who has a child, and this works even if you both are the biological parents, but it's a lot harder when you are the outside parent trying to be a parent or be in that person's life and love their child as well. When you have a partner that works odd hours and is a single but very involved parent, and that person is working the graveyard shift or the overnight shift, and they're pretty much secure in thinking that they have an understanding with their child, that their rules are understood and obeyed, and they're trusting their child to be doing what it is they're told and expected to do. What happens when you're in that awkward situation as a significant other to have drove by a school area or something one day and saw your partner's child involved in something that, A, you know their parent would not approve of, B, they're not supposed to be in that area in the first place, and C, is definitely going to lead them back to a load of trouble, the child and the parent ultimately, since the child is a minor. So what do you do? Do you say something to the child? Do you say something to the parent? Do you do both? Do you back off because you know that that parent is not going to be receptive to hearing that their child that they believe is home paying attention is going to really be engaging in something that they don't expect them to be? What do you do? So my take on the situation, I see you there at the alpha panelist. I'll bring you in a minute. You have to be a village beyond the fears of what may or may not be said. Now, I understand that there's an aspect of that child might lie and tell their parent that you're lying. That person may not want to be bothered with you. As a matter of fact, a couple of my panelists who wrote a reply to the feedback in the pre-broadcast discussion actually stated that very fact, that the person got upset with them for telling them what they saw about their child, and they turned on them, and their relationship broke up. Well, that's a person in denial. It's usually a father with their daughters. That men have a harder time accepting that their daughters do wrong than a woman would have about her daughter or even her son. So that's one problem. But what do you do? Do you allow this person that you love to not know for the sake of keeping the relationship, when if something happens to their child, and not only that, the obligation to the safety of a child, as a matter of fact, do you not say anything because you don't want to upset that person? But their child is headed down a path that you clearly know about and could get killed, and that will ultimately cause heartbreak to this person who will blame you anyway for having known something and never said anything? Do you approach the child yourself and attempt to be a village? Or do you make sure that you do both? That's the question on the table. I think that we have to take the reins and pretty much consider the overall importance of certain things. And I believe that you have to be a village for your children. Our children are being lost to many things. And nowadays, because of the fact that we've been conditioned, ripped apart, unseen, unglued, shut down, effeminized, emasculated, whatever else you can think of, we're so torn and broken that they have nothing that's normal to start with in the first place. There's the ideal parent home has been broken up into a single parent struggle. The ideal parents who could be separated but still be civil and co-parent from different locations, that no longer happens because the world and the media and all of these organizations and systems put in place are designing us to devalue all of that, to be desensitized. Our own children don't have any loyalty to their parents any further. So if we could see that there's a child clearly doing something that we once did as children and we knew where that came from, do we let it go? Do we try to stop our happiness, or I should say our need to have companionship, by not telling the person we're being companions with that their child is involved because we're afraid of their reaction? Or do we say that I love them that much, or I love that child that much, that I'd rather me say what I say and know that at least I did my part in trying to make sure that this person was okay? I mean, what do you do? It is a very sticky situation in a new relationship. But we do have an obligation as a parent overall, as a member of the community, to protect our community, to protect our children, our future, those that don't know. We have dropped the ball. We have to pick it up somewhere. So that's my question tonight. How do we continue to be a village beyond all of our fears? The fears of what that kid nowadays might do or say or try, the lies they may tell, the fears of what the parent might say. What do we do? I'm going to bring in our first panelist to hear what they have to say. Anyone, just 1 minute. Welcome to the show, Corey. You're on the air.
Good evening, Lady Barnett, and God bless all the listeners and the panelists that will soon be joining us, I'm pretty sure. The topic is a real sticky situation. I would like to start off saying that there's a lot of the quotation of it takes a village to raise a child. I've sat back and I've studied that saying. And for people that don't know, that is an old African proverb. But in today's society, I don't think I would trust the village to help raise my child, because for the simple fact, I look at it like this. If your child is out there and gets into something, gets into some trouble or something, the authorities are not going to come to the village. They're going to come to you. That, whether you be the mother or the father, they're not going to come to the village. The village is not going to have anything to do with it. They're going to look at you. First of all, I look at the situation like with a child, the foundation starts at home. There's no village. So what you pour into your child matters a lot more than what the village can give you, because your child can go out there in the village and somebody could be standing on the corner and they're selling drugs. That's part of the village. You know, so you have to be careful of that. And that's why I say today it kind of makes me look at it kind of cross-eyed, because you pretty much can't trust the village in today's society. When we were coming up, oh, yeah, because, you know, you got your butt kicked by the time you got home, and then you got a royal butt whooping once you got home. So in today's society, it's totally different, because I deal with a lot of parents and their attitudes, and some of the single parents, they have a son. And it blew my mind when this parent told me that they're not going to allow their son to work. I was like, wait a minute, there's something wrong with that picture. I said, because in with raising a young man, and if there's a man in his life, he's going to tell him, look, you have to work. There's nothing like getting that feeling once you get your first paycheck that you done put your heart into and you done busted your behind and put in your blood, sweat, and tears to get this first check in your hand and know that you really earned that. That's part of being a man. That's part of going into manhood. How can you deprive your son of that? You know, that's why I say it takes two parents to raise a child, and that's boy or girl, because there's an ingredient that you can't do without. So when you say a village, I have a problem with that sometimes now. You know, I used to believe in it, but now it's like, as much as I be dealing with a lot of young people here and some of these parents, it makes me look at it totally different now.
I totally agree with everything that you're saying, Deacon, but my point of tonight's broadcast and question is this. If you are in a relationship with someone, and I mean, this is just one example of how you yourself makes the first step to the difference. You, as an individual, being that one person to start. If you see your significant other's child involved with something, and that parent, father or mother, works odd hours believing that they put a rule structure in place, that they're an involved parent. It's not like they just go to work, come home, flop out. They're involved.
Right.
They're doing everything they have to do, and they have to trust that their certain age child is going to follow rules. They're very strict about it. You are involved with this person, and right. You happen to be driving by somewhere or walked up and saw that child involved with something that you know that other parent would not allow at all whatsoever. Do you turn your head and not say anything to your significant other because of the fact that he or she may not want to hear it because they don't believe anything and it's going to be a little odd? Do you continue to say it? Do you approach the child, or do you do both? Because a lot of times...
I feel as though you have to do both. You have to do both, because if you're in a relationship with your partner, there has to be a level of trust, and that trust crosses all boundaries. It doesn't matter what it is, even if when it comes to a child, especially when it comes to a child. Okay,
right.
I may take the child to the side and talk to him myself, but I'm gonna let them know. Hey, I'm gonna let your mother know what's going on. I'm not keeping this from your mother, because she needs to be aware of what's going on.
That certainly has to be a rule anyway, and that's one of the things I was looking for. But there's a little more of an angle to this as well. If you are in a relationship with someone, and especially if that relationship is serious, you will be a part of that child's life anyway on a family basis. The thing is, that's still not your child. It's not your biological child. In the end, that parent has to make the ultimate decision on what to do. So you wouldn't have the right to share that type of a secret with that child by saying something to that child and not saying something to their parent anyway.
Right.
But you still have
right.
to step up and be that extra voice and that extra support. Of course, no parent is going to believe. What is going to want to believe that a child that so far has been acting very well with the rules, hasn't given them any trouble up until now, so far, whatever they're doing behind the parents' back, as it hasn't come to light by any means, but they're not going to want to hear it in the beginning. And then again, you might have a partner that is one of those people that as much as they wish that their child is as great and straight and would never do wrong, they are open to understanding that a child at any time could commit something a little out of character. But even so, what do? Do you not say a word because you're afraid of what your significant other is going to do? If that person wants to walk away from you because they don't want to hear something about them, then maybe that wasn't for you in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
That's a person's denial, and that usually happens more with men hearing about their daughters than it is about mothers and their daughters and mothers and their sons.
Mm-hmm.
But my next thing is, this is what I mean about us taking that step to being a village beyond our fears. Regardless of what, it's time for a change. We do have to stop putting blinders on about our kids because it's our kids. We act like because we love them, they're angels, they were sweet, they were cute, they were amazing, they were advanced for their age, all the stuff we like to put it on our children, that they
right.
are not one of being human being children.
Right.
And we also, that's one thing, so we have to stop the NIMBY disease and we have to stop the blinders. It comes from both ends. It comes from you being a person that's saying, these badass kids, I ain't saying nothing. I'm going to walk by. I'm not going to say a word. If
and
I
that's
say
the wrong,
something,
that's the wrong
children,
angle to take right there. Yeah.
Exactly. That's one thing. Because they're afraid and not saying that they don't have a real good reason for being afraid or for walking away. Do you really believe that the elders of our day really and truly could look at these kids now and have no care? They cannot.
No.
They're not both,
no.
They're not that way. However, they are self-preserving.
Yeah.
So they're going to say what makes them feel like they're doing the right thing in the way that we do when we're angry. Anger brings out false bravado.
Mm-hmm.
When you say it in an angry way, you build yourself up. You ever notice we
right.
talked, I think Arlene was the one who talked about adding a couple of curses in a message we're trying to get our kids. You know, saying
right.
that, yeah, that building blew up, MF. Well, think about when you're mad. When you say something and you got some curse words behind it, or you said it with all your body language in it, you felt like you really said something.
Mm-hmm.
So when an older person is walking around going, I don't know, these children are these some badass kids today. I'm just going to walk by. They might shoot you nowadays. Oh, they're saying that, but they're going upstairs, and they're feeling really bad about what they see.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I get it. You don't want to say anything to just any kid. You have
right.
to watch your back and watch your stuff. But well, for that one kid you know is not that gangster in training, that you see doing something, especially when that child is the product of somebody that you love.
Right.
Do you walk away? On the other hand, parents, we need to stop going, don't nobody say nothing to my kids because that's my child. Don't tell me what to do with my kids. Obviously, you need help. We all
well, you
need.
Know what?
You could be the best parent in the world. Your child will find a way to be a teenager.
You know what, Katie?
Mm-hmm.
I can say this, that I was the type of parent, if you came to me and told me something about my child, I wouldn't put it past them because I know the type of little child I was when I was coming up. And my mother thought the world of me, and like some people used to come to her and like, well, your son John was doing such and such and such and such, and she was like, are you serious? Right? So by the time I got home, some of the people that really knew my mother had already tore my ass up, excuse the expressing. But by the time I got home, she would tell me, look, I heard you were doing this and you were doing that. And before I could say anything, the phone was ringing off the wall. And she would have a conversation and say, well, the question I asked you, and you better not lie to me, did you do such and such and such and such? And I was like, well, I think I'm going to get this one over on her. No, that wasn't me. So what you saying, what I'm hearing, those adults are lying, right? I'm not saying that, so you lying. And that was it. Once I stuttered and had to, with this, she knew I was lying. And then the action started. So, you know, it's like a lot of these parents now, you go to them and try and tell them about their child, and they're more worse off than the kids are. And you can imagine where they get it from. So
absolutely, that's
it's
what
totally
is
a whole different animal with today's society.
Right.
So you have to
absolutely.
You have to pick your battles. You have to be picking your battles very carefully, because some of these parents are so I don't know. I don't even know how to explain it. But
blinders.
I've never said. Go ahead.
Blinders. They got blinders on. They don't
yeah.
want to know. They don't need to know. I think, Arlene, I keep on alluding back to that statement that she made. Panelists, I see you there. I keep alluding to what she said in our deflecting from the elephant in the room segment. She said, if you put your blinders on and pretend you don't see it, or you act like you don't see it, then you're not accountable. Listen, you are absolutely right. Before you got home to try to lie about it, the 8 neighbors have called your house, visited your farm, or did something to let you know that they saw your child, even if Mrs. Jones down the block with the rollers in her hair and her pointy glasses added her own little spin on it because she didn't like you in the first place. But the point was, by the time that you got there, that story plus the real story plus the twisted, slightly true story plus the story that really is true, but they added a couple of things because it didn't sound good just saying it that way. We got all of that. But at the end
mm-hmm.
of that line, was your mother or your father standing there ready to put the sentence on that period? The period on that
right.
sentence, I should say. All right? We don't have that nowadays, nor do we have the same culture of children's mindset to respect that line. We understand that. However, my question once again is, when you are given, you said pick your battles, perfect word to say. Because if you happen to be your significant other's other, who happened to be the person that saw your significant other's child, that's your battle.
Right.
Now how do you fight
right.
it? The problem
mm-hmm.
is, and a professor has alluded to it, Taylor has alluded to it, Patrick has alluded to it, we've all seen it, we are damn afraid of everything. We're afraid of what happened on the outside. We're afraid of what we might lose if we say something from the inside about the outside. Now we're afraid of our damn kids, because you know something? The government done told them, listen, you ain't supposed to really do this, but if your parents hit you, just call us. We got this. We got your back.
Mm-hmm.
We
well,
got your back.
That don't work with me because maybe I'm a little crazy because I've never had to deal with you know with fear because I'm even my mother even says today you know you need to have your head examined because sometimes you have to well you know what some fear is good but then you have some bad fear the fear that'll put you into a corner to where you afraid to say anything or. You're worried about what somebody's going to say if you say something about it. I don't care about that. You know,
right.
and a lot of people tell me that man, you kind of off. I'm like, no, I'm not off. I'm just real with it. You know, if you can't take the realization when you're dealing with me, don't say nothing to me because I'm going to give it to you raw, and it's going to be, you know, hey, cut and dry.
It's absolutely true. I'm one of those parents who also believe that in the end it's my child or their way. But the deal is, the reality is that the majority of the way this country runs, of the way our people in particular think, is just that. Problem is, we now are given these little battles, these little important first steps. And like I said, the ninth scenario is if you are the significant other of a person who's very involved with their child or happens to work hours, we can't watch our children 24/7.
No, you can't.
No matter how many GPSs you put in your butts, no matter how many softwares you have, how many parental controls you have, somehow, some way, this generation finds a way to offset all of that the same way we did. Listen, this is one of the things I like to tell my kids when they think they're slick with the cell phones. First of all, with all the great technology we have that sort of shortcuts everything, convenience everything, lightweights everything and the whole nine, they also leave a bigger trail of telling on their super self. Okay?
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
yeah.
The game is just the same, just that it's been upgraded. Let's talk technology in that respect, ladies and gentlemen. When our great-grandparents with children trying to go see that boy or that girl that our parents forbid us from seeing. They found a way to go meet in the woods and write a little message on a tree with a cowbell,
yeah,
with a milk bucket on the side. You understand? When our parents got there, they found a way to write it on a weed wrapper or, you know, tell a girlfriend. By the time we became teenagers, we knew how to put a girl's name over a boy's number or go to the bathroom stall and write a message on the wall to pass to your friend, to ask your friend to call your house and talk to your mother while the guy's standing there. So all these little tricks we've done, and better at it, mm-hmm, because our parents couldn't trace what was in your head, but we could damn sure trace a text message even after it's been deleted.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Yeah.
So with all the extra greatness we have electronic digital fingerprints following every damn thing you do. Metro cards could tell the police where you've been.
Correct.
So my question once again is, from both angles of the situation, parents, black parents in particular, we have to stop telling people to stay out of our business, because your children violating their property, standing on the buses and being disrespectful and loud, trying to fit in because the village has dropped the ball and left them stranded. So now, after we've made them become a weapon of their own devices, okay, now we want to criticize the monsters that came out of our failing to watch them laugh.
Mm-hmm.
So they are your damn business. They are our business. We may not have birthed them, but they're in my backyard. So they are our business. When a cop steps into my backyard looking for your kid because you done said to somebody, mind your business, when he was busy trying to rob a liquor store with his friends, and it wasn't even his robbery, but his friends convinced him to do it.
Right.
It was your, it's our business.
Let me ask this, and to everyone that's listening out here, especially the ones that say people need to mind their business. I'm standing in my window at my house, and let's say about 10:30, 11 o'clock. And I just so happen to see your son walking down the street. Somebody comes up behind him, questions him, tries to get whatever money or whatever valuables that they have. They refuse to give it to him. Somebody shoots them point blank in the face and kills your child. I should mind my business.
When the police comes and asks for witnesses that can help,
I should mind my business.
Thank you. You should mind your business. Don't say nothing to my child. When you see your child running with a bunch of people that the world knows is not a good set of people to be with, and you're, mm-hmm, somebody says something to that child to give them a heads up,
right,
and that boy runs back because he doesn't want to hear some old person telling them something and runs to you, you want to come out with your gears on, ready to defend your child, because you refuse to sit there and ask, why would that person see you with those people anyway? What time was it? Where were you supposed, mm-hmm, to be at that time according to my rules? That's the question,
right,
we need to be asking. We're not going to jump up, of course, and believe everything everybody tells us right away. We're going to ask our kids first. And based on what we know about our child, we'll know the body language if they're lying. We'll know if they're hiding something. We'll know. But that's where it should be. Don't tell me to mind my business, that stay out of my way, that's my kid. Because when your kid is trying to rape my daughter, or your daughter's trying to set up my son, it's my business. Got to bring in our panelists to get their intake on this.
Yeah. Wow.
Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, Katie.
Hey, Darlene, I got one more behind
hey,
you.
Hey, Darlene.
Hello, Fatty.
How are
Welcome
you,
Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
No, I'm fighting for information.
Hey, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
I haven't got any questions. Like, I have to go.
I think we do it to Salo.
Can you hear me now? Hello.
Yeah, a little bit louder, dude.
Willoughby Jones or Salo Jenkins. Calling from D.C.
Hey, Salo, what's up, man?
Hi, Salo. All right, try again, a little higher.
You can't hear me? can hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you.
You'll be right after Darlene, darling, okay? All right, Darlene, let's hear your feisty spin on this. You know we're waiting. I got the popcorn.
Oh, man, it's amazing. I love these conversations, and I love these topics. They touch on a lot, and, you know, even with the interaction, even as an adult, we still continue to grow because you know something that I might not know. Zeddy can give me something that I might not know, and I might be able to return the favor as well as Carlton. You know, so y'all are, I applaud you guys. Y'all are great, you know, on a daily basis.
Oh, back
y'all
at
make
you.
A difference. But, Kate, now you know these young ladies think that they know what they do. They think they know what they're doing. You know, it's real simple that, like I said, they a whole nother breed. They a whole nother breed. They don't, it's like they don't even breathe the same air we breathe. But their mindset is so far distant from ours. Because the morals are not there. The integrity is not there. The pride is not there. The dignity is not there. The perseverance is not there. The stability is not there. And everybody is hell-bent on looking good on the outside and messed up on the inside.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So, you know, absolutely. As you and Zeddy said, I'm one of the last of the good Mohegans also. I was born in the 50s. Our parents wasn't no joke.
That's
and,
right.
And not just our parents wasn't no joke, but our neighbors wasn't no joke either.
Yeah.
And our big mamas were no joke either.
Okay.
Oh,
okay. They was not a joke because that was the village that they was, that we're missing, the village. Like the nosy neighbor that saved your behind a few times, but
that's
she's
right.
A nosy neighbor. You know what I mean? And then the thing that really irks me is that when you are trying to help a child out, the parent is so defensive. Like, you know, and they're condoling their children with this behavior. Because when you come to a parent and you say, listen, miss, I don't know you, but this is, I know that this child said you was his mother. I'd like to speak with you on it, about something. You know, I've came to adults in a very respectful manner. And like, you know what? I wish I never even did it. But that's still that's the key, though. That one person, that second person, that third person. See, we like Timexes.
Mm-hmm.
We take a licking and keep on ticking.
That's right.
And the reason why I say that is because we get our feelings hurt a lot. Because we are those caring people that we wish everybody else can be. And we take a risk. Yes, we do. And you know what? Not one time, I just, when it doesn't fall the way I thought it should have felt, or if it feel like that, you know, the tables turned on me, I just ask God to give me the grace and the mercy not to take out on nobody else what this person just did to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to allude to that, Darlene, because, see, there's a little bit of another side to that as well. And a lot of, because of the fact that that's the reaction we get from a lot of those parents, we don't stop to try to look beyond that or look or believe that it's more than what we've been faced with. And I'm going to tell you why. You said that a lot of times that we think about, and this is our overall people's thinking. Well, you take a risk going out there and telling somebody that their kid did something else. We take a risk taking the dollars to try to be in it to win it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there's a bigger risk of us not winning a damn thing, but spending $40, $50 we don't have, trying to make sure we just get that number. But here's another thing. I did a little bit of a study group today, a little silent study. Like, you know, sometimes I'll get right in the mix and I'll talk with people in my community. Other times I'll stand back and I'll watch a group of people behave so that I can get to the bottom of what I do when I speak about these topics. Three of the women that were in the park today, because it was a beautiful day out in New York, and I saw three of these moms that they have about between them, one to three, they got four kids between them that's known as like the loudmouth bullying kids in this little playground, okay? Now, the children are usually there after school and the parents by that time are working. I guess somehow, some way today, everybody had the day off, some way, or the half-a-day situation took place. However, we would expect to see that kid comes from a household from a parent that either isn't there or doesn't care. But
nice.
I'm seeing the parents that were just the opposite, only they did give the impression to their children that nobody could be able to go and tell on them because their parents will go against these neighbors. Now, this is the situation. I studied this one particular mom who happened to be the loudest barking dog in the group. Okay? And in the beginning, I was like, oh, she's rude. What the hell is wrong with her? But then I sat back today with my kids, and I saw the same woman. And what came out of her mouth next was this. You don't know everybody's talking to me about this and that. I'm trying with that girl. She thinks I like her walking around doing this. Don't nobody understand what it's like to be dealing with the child that you beat, you sit there, you talk to, you try to go with, you try to do the right thing, and there's nobody helping you. There's no father in the picture. There's nobody around. And you know something? That's where that comes from. Because at the end of the day, she's by herself, but she's all her daughter has. And if her daughter's walking around being bad and she feels, she's trying to handle it on her own and do what she got to do as a mother for her child out of love, but it's not working. I'm going through a couple of knuckleheads, knock up against the wall with my own son. And we have to get up and do it again. But the difference is with me, I definitely allow village.
But that is my whole point, Katie. We all have struggled with our children. I already told you what I did for my son for his 18th birthday. That was the hardest thing for me to do because that's the only son I have in the whole wide world. But I had to let him go. However, even though I was going through the struggle, I was going through the Pinsworm, and I was going through the Explorers, I was going through Job Corps, I was going through so much different stuff trying to save my son's life. And in the same breath that I was trying to save my son's life, I didn't turn my back on anyone who had something to say to me concerning my son.
Absolutely.
I mean,
but
it's
the one,
okay.
Katie,
we all go through the struggle. The bottom line is how we handle our struggle.
I was saying true, darling. The only difference
is you are
a person, though, that knew how to absorb what you learned from the village and be a village. Even now, I see the way you guys will take the risk of saying something even nowadays. This woman, after saying all of that, bowed her head pretty much, shaking her head like most frustrated parents do, and said, and all these people want to do is talk crap. Don't nobody stand up to help me. That's the whole thing. So do you honestly think that if this type of mom has heard 15 people telling her that her daughter's a badass, that her daughter's going to be a thug, that her daughter's been seen doing this and that, and then turn around and judge her, that she's going to believe that one person that came up to her and said X, Y, and Z is going to be the true person? That's going to take a little bit of extra time.
However, like I said, Katie, it's how we deal with our struggle. Because let me tell you something. I'm not going to let a whole bunch of people come up and tell me anything as far as that is concerned, as long as they're telling it to me in a respectful manner. It's up to me how I handle it. Not only that, I would also look at the person and say, excuse me, I see you don't have a problem talking about my child, but will you save my child? Are you the one that will save my child, or are you the one that will stand there and watch my child get hit by a bus and then say, I told her that boy was bad?
Right. And that's what I'm speaking about tonight, that those of us that have that mentality need to change our stance, the same way those of us that try to close our ears and close our eyes and pretend that our kids could do no wrong has to change as well. We do have to start. My question is, how do we continue to take that step towards being a village beyond all those fears? The fears of what your significant other is going to say when you have to tell him a difficult thing about having seen his daughter smoking drugs with her dress hiked up to her Gucci. About the fact that you saw her coming out of what looked like could have been a sexual situation with a bunch of guys in a car or from a man's apartment. Or that she was hanging with girls who looked like they were doing the same thing. How do you tell a father that his son is one of the guys that was out there being part of a group of kids that was named in a crime as a rape or a robbery? But you kind of saw something that could support the theory that their son truly was. When that parent is out there believing that their kids are not doing this because he provides or she provides everything for this kid, and she has to work all these hours or he has to work all these hours. You are that person. What do you do? Do you turn away? It's a hard situation to be the non-blood parent, to be the non-blood figure in that person's life, and still know if you don't say anything to your significant other about their child, they're going to do one of two things. If they're mad at you for telling them the first time, they're going to be way madder with you if something happened to their kid and they knew you knew something and didn't say anything. But even if it wasn't about another person, we have an obligation to try to be a village at some point.
And you're totally right, Katie. But you know what? You know, with that situation, this is how I would handle it. Because, okay, say it's not my child and it might be my significant other's child. Sometimes people can't hear. Sometimes people can't see. Sometimes people don't want to hear and see. So you know what? I wouldn't even sit down and debate with him, oh, your child doing this, your child doing that. I would become Inspector Gadget. I would pull out all of my little instruments and my little, what do you call them? Spy stuff. And no, on a serious note, right, I would try my best to find out where that child is going to be at a specific time, and I wouldn't tell him nothing. I would show him.
Mm-hmm. Bingo. Now, that's one of the things that a person in the pre-broadcast question brought up, and I said, absolutely. So, now the next question would be, after I get to Stalo, how do we deal with what we know? Now, I've always been told, knowing is half the battle. So if you know you have a person that believes their child does no wrong, before you go and mention it, definitely take something together and, you know, do what you can to show this person. Because there's a 50-50 chance that even with all of that, that person's still going to believe you cut out their daughter or son's head and put it on somebody else's body.
Well, then it's time to go.
Exactly, but what I'm saying is, your part as a village is what? First, don't say anything, but I still would talk to the child in that minute to say, what are you doing, or at least to get them away from the situation at that moment, and maybe not tell them I plan to talk to your father or your mother.
Right. Right.
Okay? But I definitely would do that, because it's about saving a kid. Whether
right.
they understand they need saving or not, children in the teenagehood is designed to be stupid for a reason.
Yeah.
Growing things is stupid things.
Well, that's one of my favorite lines. Listen, I don't care who your mother is. I'm going to save your life, and then me and her can deal after.
Thank you.
You know, I'm not going to stand there and watch a child literally get hurt if I can help them. That's not who I am. That's not the blood that I walk with, You know what I'm saying? It's just
sometimes
not
no action is just as guilty as having done something, and that's the way
exactly.
I feel.
Exactly. But
you
got to be careful,
too. I've done all I can to do what I can, and that's the way I feel. I'd rather walk away knowing that I've done everything I can, and now it's up to that person to listen. And let me make something very clear. People may not always act like they're listening, but they always hear.
Mm-hmm.
They always hear. Stay low, darling. Thank you for waiting. Your turn.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Katie, I just agree with everything you're saying. And before moving on to your addition to your question, you know, I think we do have to be wary of these tactics, you know, the fear tactics that are being used, you know. And the reason we can't trust or don't trust our village, you know, is really because they want us to fear our children, because the children are the key to our freedom, you see. So the children are the first ones villainized for wearing hoodies, villainized for this and that. The reason we out in the street and we see children doing anything with themselves and we don't approach them or we don't say anything to them is out of fear, you know what I mean? But sometimes, well, you know, on an individual basis, we got to look towards our opportunities to help and guide the kids, you know. Our opportunities to help and guide them, you know, are God-given, you know, for those of us, you know. We get opportunities to help and guide these kids towards success, but sometimes we got to sacrifice our own comfort to do this work, to do God's work, you know. And for people that's familiar with the narrated law, you know, doesn't it tell us to comfort the fatherless children?
Mm-hmm.
So that's for the most part, you know, that's like a prophet. That's a beauty. That's an oracle right there, spoken to us, telling us, you know, there was going to be, you know, such a societal burden that we would have to comfort fatherless children. Yet we're afraid of them. You see, and the reason we're not afraid of them naturally, we know we how to be a village. So we do exactly as you say. We not only approach the child, but we approach not only the child, but we let the parent know. We put some thought into the matter because there's a lot of think about fear after a scary situation, right? Don't you try and suppress and ignore that situation and the feeling? Most people do that, right? Most people, when they fear, they get in a scary situation, then they try to get out of the way, move away from it. Is that's what it is? And then you try to ignore the situation. That's what these people are doing. Those and the people that you spoke of earlier that are just you know, they look the other way. They don't care, you know, they don't, you know, want to get their hands dirty, if, you know, whatnot. But not that you have to get your hands dirty, you know. You don't even have to do anything but just advocate, you know, something positive in a given time. You know, do some humanity, be human at some point in time, you know. I was in this training about teen violence. I didn't even know what I was walking into. And I think I talked about it before, but when I went in there, I didn't realize, and I'm gonna just say a few things. I don't want to disclose everything. But one thing they did do was show me every victim of a teenage murder for years. Like, I saw these gruesome pictures. I'm thinking it's a seminar. It's this training we go to. We have to do this, it's a seminar. It's for the kids and this and that. But the person leading it, and I'm not even going to talk about the person leading it, but it's kind of, it's really, really military oriented. I was just talking about it earlier, too. It was like, it was telling people, and the people, it was full of people who work with children. It was telling people that they might want to, when they clock out, they might want to carry a gun. This was advocated heavily in this training. And this might be the case in all things, right? But there's other things at hand. Like in Washington, D.C., a black person can't even own a gun. I mean, there's been a gun ban in this city for 30, 40 years. I don't know how long. In just about every city that was predominantly African-American or every urban city, period. Like, so that shouldn't even have been a question, but that was hugely advocated during the training. And it was things like that. So I was like, wow. It was kind of, you know, it was like, I don't know, it was kind of like law enforcement-y. But we were coming to a teen violence training, which we did talk about the psychology of really, 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 really troubled youth. But at the same time, it was kind of like profiling you also. And it was kind of like fear tactic. Like they showed us all the gruesome murders, you know, and it was like it was trying to instill such a fear that it was like help, but help from a distance to an extent, right? And that's the way that the system in itself wants us to handle things. But the way we handle things, we should handle things as a people, as a one aim, one destiny, as a one God people, you know, we should look towards one thing, you know, and that is comforting our children. And because the rest of the world is just leaving them out to slaughter, they're the key to our success. That's why they want us afraid of them. The key to your success is they want you to be afraid of.
Absolutely.
So,
and I will
so
say this.
The opposite.
I would rather somebody not have fear if they see, you know, we think of fear because we allude in our minds to the worst case scenario. The worst, well, in order if you see something shocking, you feel you got to be confrontational. You know if you're going to be confrontational with kids that you obviously see and doing something bad, then that's not going to have a good result. So why is it that for 2 seconds you don't start to think of a way to approach them in a way where they don't feel threatened or like you're going to be a tattletale or a snitch or call the cops? I'll give you a perfect example. There's a near my house that I take my children to. Every day after school, if it's nice, we have a couple extra minutes before we go home. But in that playground, that playground is really designed for tiny tot babies and maybe kids up to, say, the third or fourth grade. Okay, now you have junior high school kids coming down the hill because that's a little bit cool spot. And the first thing they do, whether there's baby carriages or toddlers walking around or kids on their bus, is smoke weed and drink. The weed is all in the air, thick as a cloud, to these babies right there breathing all this in. And every day either mothers grab their kids and leave or they're talking about it in corners, not doing a thing about it but talking about it. Waiting on we have like our own version of the guardian angels that come to that park to keep the community safe, but they're not always there. So what happened is, it was a nice day. This time I wasn't packing my children up to suffer. I walked over to the boys. I said, listen, guys, can y'all do me a favor? And y'all, take that to the other side in the field where there's nobody there and it's big and wide and everything. There's kids breathing that in. You know, y'all don't have to think about that. You're going to call the cops. I said, brother, black people got enough cops on them for nothing as it is. Just take yourself to the other side and respect the baby, dude. All right, my bad. And then I've got all these people looking at me going, what? And I'm sitting there like they're not monsters. You know, maybe they just don't, they're not expecting you to come and challenge what they think is their manhood or their ability to fight. You know, they all took their clan, as huffle and ruffle as it was, and kept it moving. You know, they came back the next day. When they saw me there, they walked off to the other side. Yeah. How about you sitting up there, and there's a girl walking, and she's got, you know, sometimes when we sit down and we don't realize our skirt came up, guys ain't going to sit there and go, yo, baby, listen, your skirt's up, bring it down. They're going to make fun and get their feel, their cop, their look, do whatever. Then they're going to hide their friends, and now it's going to be something else. So I'm not talking about you wonderful guys on the panel. That's why you're here. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking about those the average person, even if they're not a person that's going to accost this girl, is not going to tell her to pull her pants down pull her dress down until after he's gotten some free voyeurism. Okay, then the others are going to try to take it to another level. It's bad enough that a woman can't walk the streets now dressed in something she feels looks good, and because he likes what he sees, it's automatically, we got to go get that chick. I got to have her. And some guys could take the fact that you might want it, but it's not for you. Okay, and some guys be like, nah, she don't really mean no. So how about those people that were sitting in the window nosy about us playing skelly in the streets? Being something like that today, and maybe call, I would rather have nosy Mrs. Jones in the window calling the cops from behind her window when she sees my daughter about to get hurt or my son about to get jumped, rather than having a person want to walk away and close their eyes for fear of their life. When do we stop being afraid of every little thing to the point that is detrimental to us? to losing our kids because we're too afraid if we say something to the cops, we might be on the next list. We're too afraid. The cops are supposed to patrol for us. We're too afraid to not go vote because, you know, to vote because if we vote, then we might say something or do something that, you know, someone else is gonna find out we said, and then what? All right, listen, it's all right, little Timmy. You know, he just hit you in the side of your head. It's just a little bump. We used to get it all the time. Mm-hmm. Panelists coming in. Let me bring them in and see what they have to say. Welcome to the show, Corey. You're on the air.
How you doing, everybody? This is Patrick.
Hey, Patrick, welcome. Welcome, welcome. All right, what is it you would like to say?
You know, you guys are talking about a great topic, something that I'm passionate about, which is the children. And I spend a lot of time down here talking to the children and posting about different ways to communicate with kids, and because the common thread you hear amongst adults nowadays is what you guys have been talking about, that whole fear thing. Everybody's scared to get involved. They're all talking about how the kids are randomly wiping each other out for no reason and it don't make sense and this, that, and the third. So I spend a whole bunch of time, even in groups, trying to talk to adults and to convince them that, look, these kids are not monsters, like you just said. These kids, it might not make sense to us, but to them, it makes perfect sense. And they're not going to talk to you if your first encounter with them is something negative or something like that. So even with the adults, when we start talking about building a village type mentality, it always starts before the kids get involved. Now, that means as soon as you move into a neighborhood, we should be meeting and greeting each other, having interactions with the parents before you approach your parent and say, hey, your kid just, you know, robbed a liquor store or something, you know, your kid, you know, killed the poodle or whatever the case may be. You know, if that's your first interaction with the parent, then the parent is probably not going to be too receptive and not going to believe you. But if you built that rapport up already, then you can go to them on a different footing. Now, if I see a kid doing something crazy, my first instinct is always to approach the kid first. That's just the way it is. I'm not too far removed from those years myself, so I can remember what it was like. I can communicate with them. So my first instinct is always, I'm going to go to the kid first. I'm going to try to do what I can with the kid first. I'm going to try to build some rapport with the kid first. And that might be a little counterproductive or counterintuitive to what a lot of people would say, but it works for me. Once I have some sort of rapport with the kid, if I need to elevate things further, I'll go to the parent later. But I never go right from, unless it's something major, I never go right from seeing the kid do something straight to parent, because I understand the way most parents are nowadays. They're not going to listen. It's going to put me in a negative space, and now I got to pay a trust tax. I don't want to pay a trust tax. You know, so that's just something that's worked for me. But, you know, you guys are hitting on a lot of good points, things that I hadn't even thought of before, especially when you talk about developing the village mentality, which is something that, you know, I champion to the ends of the earth. We're too individualistic in everything. And our kids, raising our kids is no different. We're too individualistic in our child rearing. We often hear it said in on this show and other shows and everywhere else, village to raise a child. But then when the village tries to help you raise your child, you tell the village to get out of your business. So
exactly.
So, you know, I get that, but I think we have to start looking at it differently. When we moved into this neighborhood, one of the first things I did and my wife did was go around and meet the neighbors. You know, and it took, for us anyways, it builds that rapport. Now if we need the kids to crash at somebody's house because we're both out, that's available. If somebody needs something for their kids, that's available. So that rapport is already there. So if something comes up, you know, we know who the old lady is peeking out the window every 5 minutes. Like, we know where she's at. We, you know, everybody knows pretty much everything. And it's sad to say that because I don't live in a black neighborhood. But when I lived in black neighborhoods, and we're getting ready to move currently, but when I lived in black neighborhoods, we would try to do that same thing. No matter where we go, we always try to meet the people first, try to, you know, whatever the case may be, we ain't baking cookies and pies or nothing like that. But we will, if we see you out and about, we take walks through the neighborhood, we'll knock on the door or two, how you doing, we just move. I think that type of thing needs to happen more in the black community. And that way, when you see a kid doing something negative, the parents already had that rapport. And
absolutely,
and it
Patrick.
Can be happening.
Good point.
Absolutely, Patrick. Absolutely, Patrick.
Right.
I'm going to tell you something just based on that last remark you just made. I'm in the park today, okay? I was already, you guys saw my post. I was already upset that I finally got the guts to go to the dentist to get this bad tooth removed, only to sit there for 3 hours and be told that I have to get a referral to go to a specialist to take it out. I'm sitting there like, you're the dentist, it's a tooth, what's the problem? You know, but that's how I was feeling. So I go back. This little boy, I mean, he wasn't a little tiny boy. He was about, I'll say, maybe 11, 12, trying to do some tricks. Now, in our park, they tried to make, you know, like a little bit of a, like a nature section that it looks like you're in the, you know, going on a nature walk and there's little patches of rocks and it's really cute. However, these kids came over there and tried to do a jump over the rocks, and he missed. Not only did he hit his knee, he hit his head. Okay? So we were all sitting there. Man, I threw my shoes off and ran over because the minute, and then he stood up, and he was just staring at the floor in a daze for a couple of minutes, like leaning over his knees, and he's looking. Now, I'm up there, and I'm going, are you all right? And the first thing that happened was he tried to brush it off like, I'm a man, you lady. You know, I'm fine. I said, hey, listen, little man. Listen. Head injuries is nothing to play with. Let me see where you hit yourself. He's looking at me like, why would she want to do that? Like, you know, he was not used to anybody walking up besides, I guess, somebody knows, to find out if he's okay. Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, what? That, like, that's a foreign question. I said, look, little man, I get it. Around here, it's hard for you to understand that a strange person could actually be concerned. But I'm a mother, and you are a kid, and you just hit your tiny little head on a big-ass rock. So let me take a look at what happened. So now I turned, and I looked. He just had a little bit of a red mark. You know, it wasn't a big knot or anything. I said, show me where the rock hit you, okay? And he was like, right here. I'm fine. I said, show me where the rock hit you. Okay, so I'm touching his head and I'm looking behind his ear and everything. Thank God there was no big gashes or anything. But I told him, listen, you stay still for a little bit, and if you feel dizzy or anything within the next 10 or 15 minutes, or you feel any pain, you let me know because we're going to call the ambulance. We'll call your mom. Then I turn around and he's got a big gash in his knee, right in the same knee on the same side of the head that he hit. So the first thing I did, I just came out from my baby son getting his baby tooth pulled, so I had some gauze left over. And I said, you want some gauze to clean that? He's like, yeah, please. I was like, all right, go ahead to the water fountain and wash it off. So just this little gesture. Now, through the whole time after that, he kept coming over. And when he saw my son's fall or something, he was like, oh, miss, and he fell down. He's all right. I said, you can call me Katie's son. So that was like one thing this kid hasn't seen in I don't know how long. But the whole way that he reacted was like, what are you asking me? I'm fine. I just fell. It's not a big problem. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Our kids are desensitized to even accepting love now, which you just alluded to, as us, you know, everybody's saying the village, but the first thing that we want to do is point out that the village has monster kids. You know, the first thing we want to do is turn our nose up or start picking and choosing who belong in the club. We do need to walk around and have that village by meeting our neighbors and letting their kids interact with our kids and being able to stand there and say, no, honey, don't do that. Or that's not the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to go and talk to their parents because, like you said, when we leave and we need to go somewhere, we got somebody for everybody and they know they can come to us for the same. because that's mm-hmm. how we start building our black community within our black neighborhood and getting back what we swear we've lost because we have no money.
Mm-hmm.
So this is our problem. We got fear of everything. Fear of what the next parent's going to say. Fear of what
right.
the guy down the block is going to say. Fear about the fact that they saw us being generous to ourselves. What will a person on the outside say? Fear that if we help a kid, you know, get an extra pair of pants, that they might think we're rich and come rob us. Fear if we say something to that parent's going to want to fight. Well, she might. So you don't know where that fight's coming from. But guess what? Ask her, listen, would you rather that I have stood back and not let and let that person come after your daughter and say nothing? Or would you rather that I'm telling you and you alone, not the village, not the world, but you, our parents? I can guarantee you after all that open and hollering, they're going to go in that house so stupid for saying what they said and start dealing with their kid, unless they're that type of parent that just doesn't give a damn and wants to be friends with their kid. But the whole point is that we don't have the luxury or we not afforded the ability to let one of those go. We don't have the right to sit there and go, well, it might not work, so might as well not do it.
Nope.
We have broken ourselves up far beyond repair, so it's time for us to say, it's already broken. How much more broken can it be? Can we try to start putting one of those pieces together?
Right.
Black people, if this isn't rock bottom, I don't know what the hell you are looking for.
Even if we wasn't rock bottom, it's just humanness in itself, you know. Just mm-hmm. even if we wasn't rock, like my favorite proverb on children is that no child should be baby while another baby is thrown to a hyena's feet for food.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have to put it out. You know, we got to give every child a chance for success, a chance to F up, a chance for this, a chance for that. Yeah, and they all deserve it. And that's amazing, you know. And then we have to confront ourselves when that truth comes out. We have to confront ourselves and our judgments on the children and how we look at them, how we view them, how some of us do, you know. Some of us didn't come up through what our children go through. Most of our children go through, you know. Some of us don't understand. Yet and still, you know, we don't have the simple, that's the simplest rule we should just set in place right there. No child should be baby while another one is thrown to the hyenas for food. Boom. That'll cut out a whole bunch of the bull crap.
We have to start teaching ourselves again and then passing this on to our children, but we have to do it to ourselves in a much quicker manner than our children have the right to. And I'm going to tell you why. We've had our chance to run this route, to be kids, to be stupid, to make our decisions the wrong way and learn the right way. We had our turn. We dropped the ball, and they lost their turn because now they have to be us trying to be them. That's crazy. But what I will say is this. We have to teach them that there's fear. Without fear, there's no victory because there's nothing to overcome if we didn't want fear. We got to teach them that without a failure, there'll be no success. Without a trial, there's no error. Without an error, there's nothing to understand. So if we're going to keep on walking around having let ourselves become broken and destroyed, all of a sudden trying to walk out like we're entitled and privileged to have it all now, what the hell are we teaching our kids to strive for? If we can't even give them guidance while they're falling. Anybody remember teaching their child how to ride a bike time? If not, remembering how it was to learn how to ride a bike for the first time, where your parents are running behind you holding that seat, or the training wheels is holding you up. And then one day they let go and didn't tell you, and they swore to God, you swore to God that they were still holding you. And the minute you first found out that they weren't holding you, that's when you fell the first time. Because, like, you went, whoa, okay. But then when your father or mother told you, listen, you could do this, you were sitting up there cycling for a whole 10 minutes, and I wasn't holding you, but you thought I did. Now, start knowing that you did it and see what you could do with that. And in the middle of that, we still said, it's okay if you get a little scared. I'm still going to be here, but you do have to try again. What happened to us?
And I'm going to say this again. If we have allowed ourselves to get this far down, we are at the bottom of the well, people. There's no place to go once you're down at the bottom but up. So anything we try now, it can't bring us any further down. There's only one place to go. So what's the harm in trying something different? What's the harm in looking at that child and remembering that somebody called you a badass once? And yes, there are a whole lot more werewolf-like kids now. Like, you know, you turn around, they might snarl on you and throw some green acid at you or something. But not every one of them are angry and criminal. Not every one of them are angry and evil. And there are some kids that are just going to be what they're going to be. I'm sorry. There are some kids there's just no saving from start to finish.
You know what, Katie?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you hit on what we like to call the aha moment, which is what I like to call the true test of intelligence. We've all gone through those moments, and I've mentored a lot of kids that have failed for whatever reason to be got that experience, the moment where all of a sudden something that was extremely difficult or something that you couldn't do becomes something that you can do. Riding in the back is a perfect example because it's normally the earliest memory people have. You know, they can't normally go back to remembering how they struggled to walk, and then all of a sudden one day they were just up on their feet and moving. You know, but that experience is when you really deal with a lot of young kids, you can begin to pick out which kids have had that experience and which kids haven't. Because the kids that haven't are almost always more prone to quitting, more prone to giving up, more prone to negative thoughts and going down negative pathways, almost always chasing the easy route because they've never experienced the benefit, like the reward of achieving something that was a struggle, but now it's easy for you, now it's something you can do, you're confident. Like, that feeling makes all the work worth it. It really does. And it begins you begin to feel empowered by, and the more of them you have, the real empowering thing is the more of them you have, the faster they come. And so it's a wonderful thing when you meet children, but like you just pointed out, a lot of parents nowadays, they haven't had those moments, or they can't remember what it was like to have them because they haven't had them in so long. They're raising their children in fear. They don't want to be seen as a disappointment or a failure, so they're raising their children the same way. They shy away from tough situations, difficult circumstances. So their kids shy away from tough situations, difficult circumstances, and then now you have a kid who might be struggling in a particular class in school, or you have a kid that might be struggling at whatever endeavor they're going after, and instead of having the strength of that aha moment to fall back on and say, you know what, I struggled with that and that and that, and I made it through, so I can make it through this. I just got to keep going, and it'll click for me eventually. They just say, forget it, I ain't going to never figure it out, so what's the point? And at that juncture, an innocent child, a child that has a wonderful future ahead of them filled with potential, becomes what a lot of people like to label as a menace to society. But that child can still be saved. All you have to do is give them an aha moment. And that's what has been very effective for me. A quick story, never mind. That's what's, because that would be a personal story for the young man, and I won't put it out there. But that's what's been very beneficial for me. It's worked tremendously for me with all of the kids. You walk up to them, you learn how to speak to them, you learn their language, the code of whatever street they in, because New York streets operate a lot different than Florida streets. You know,
you got that right.
You figure all that out, you know, and then you give the kid that eureka moment. They come around, and then at that point, once you build a rapport with the kids, dealing with the parents becomes so much easier. But even in that, once you build a rapport with the parents, dealing with the kids becomes that much easier. I was lucky enough, I was raised in a block where everybody in the block was family in some way, shape, form, or fashion. Cousin, uncle, auntie, great aunt, like everybody on that whole block was family. So we couldn't do nothing. And my family is wide open. If you see a child doing wrong, you beat a child doing wrong. And that's the way I am nowadays. I tell all my neighbors, look, if I see a kid doing bad and they deserve a whooping, I'm going to whoop them. Is that cool? You know, I'm asking you because I want you to know that I'm going to whoop them. Now, I'm not going to be punching your kid in the face, but I'm going to pop them. You know, but that's the way I was raised. So I was raised with the benefit of that community mentality, not because I was surrounded by people that were practicing in the sense that they were strangers, but because they were all family. Like, I couldn't hide nowhere. You know, there was nowhere to run. My family owned the whole land. I was everywhere I turned. Grandma was looking out her window. Grandpa was cleaning his gun in the back. My uncle was getting drunk cursing somewhere. My aunties was baking pies. Like, everywhere I turned around, it was family. So anytime I did anything, it was an adult walking towards me with a belt, Tom, and I'm going to beat you and then take you to your mom so she could beat you too.
Yep. I told you, we come from that day where they used to tell us to go pick the weapon for our own butt with it. Go over there and get me that strap. That two thing. Go get me another one. And then, like I told you guys, I come from two cultures. So I had the southern side, the southern black discipline all down that line because they were Father Abraham's everywhere. And then we had the Puerto Rican side. And, Lord, I got it in all cultures. When one of them, first, my mom was always the one home. My dad was around, you know, he's a type that you may not have seen him, but he was a stickler for you not disrespecting your mother. So it was like, what? She did what? Oh, tú estás hablando conmigo así? Okay, ven para acá. And the next thing I know, boom. And that's exactly what I heard, people. It was like, and for a little while, I didn't get the Spanish either because all I saw was that heel coming at me. Okay? They had heels. They had heels. They had branches. Whatever was there, if it was the iron cord, whatever it was, suddenly it turned into a well-skilled and professionally thrown boomerang. Okay, whatever it was. And wherever the hell you were running away from it, it caught you. So it was a guided missile as well. And then after that, I got it from the other. And you know, your southern folks, they talk while they hit. Every stroke is a word. Didn't I tell you not to? What was you doing down there at the courthouse?
Yeah.
You know, so you're like, you have heard everything. I think that's how we learn how to rap so well. Give me a minute, because we have another panelist coming in. I think we learn how to keep music, keep time, learn how to read notes and the whole nine from that. Welcome to the show, Paul. You're on the air.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Professor Carl Tone Jones calling live from Philadelphia.
Hey, Professor.
Hello, how are you, dude? What's up?
What's going on? So, I'm sitting here listening, and, you know, you got me chuckling because I remember those stories. I remember the day when, you know, you're out and the lights are on and somebody said, and you, it was always your back was turned to whoever was coming up the street or whoever was coming into the yard or whatever. And so there were a couple of cases where I would just see my friends freeze up and back away from me. And I turned around and I saw my mom with the belt. I said, all right, guys, it's time to call tonight. You know, it's time to take it in.
Yep.
You know, you try to get home before the swing begins. I'm listening, and, you know, one of the things I think that we miss in our community is the love factor. And I know it sounds, you know, to some people, and I'm going to stress this matter tomorrow when I go to Simon Gratz High School here in Philadelphia. My alma mater, I'm going to go there when I talk to the students tomorrow. There's an adverse relationship between the elders and the youth nowadays. And there's a disconnect. And in that disconnect, there's a lot of vitriol that's displayed on both ends. And because our youths grow up in a lot of situations, not dealing, especially our young men and our young women not dealing with that fatherly love, appropriate fatherly love, that they should be receiving from the male diaspora of what we present. A lot of times when they see that out in the street, they don't respond to it well. And a lot of times you have brothers out in the streets who are not necessarily coming from a place of love when they're addressing our youths and our, you know, we got people out in the street that they want to be authoritarians and then they want to put on a show for everybody out there. So there's a conflict and confrontation that takes place, and rarely is the addressing and redirecting of our children done from a place of love. So,
right.
I mean, think about it. Who's the first people to call the cops on us? It's us.
Right.
So when you go back to that, I think just like what Patrick was saying, we have to meet them where they are. And a lot of times the best time to build up those relationships where you can redirect somebody is before you ever have to redirect them. You build up those relationships with the youth where, you know, and neighbors alike. And I like that idea about going around meeting your neighbors. That's old-fashioned. We definitely tell you got that Southern hospitality, good brother. but, you know, when you talk about that and just the neighborhood and the communities growing up, I mean, think about it for a second. There was a story out in Texas where a young man was in the room with a young woman. And while he was in the room with a young woman, she snuck him into the house. The father came in. Somebody alerted the father that somebody was in the room. He goes into the room. She lies about him being there. He, for whatever reason, he kills the young man. Now, it turns out that his father lived, like, they lived down the street. But they, because there was no neighborly interaction, the father of the young lady did not know who the young man was.
Right.
You know, a lot of things happen in our communities because we've become, as Patrick also stated, more individualized in our function, and we've bought into this European social pattern of, and believe me, they only talk that crap to us, and they don't even function like that. But we bought into that whole nuclear family thing where you're only concerned about the household, the individual achievement thing, where you're not concerned about building a community. It's all about getting what you can, capitalism, this, that, and the other. Not that capitalism is a terribly bad thing. Monopolies are, but that's another conversation for another day. But we have not bought in to the fact that, I mean, we talk a good game. We say it takes a village to raise a child. But when that village comes together to raise that child, there's issues because it's a village full of strangers. So we have to get to the point where we are communicating with one another on one accord, you know. And I love the last part of these shows because I know, Katie, you're about to ask for solutions.
Stop trying to read my mind, brother. y'all all acting like you know me. That's not nice. No, I'm only kidding. I like that. And I am going to ask for a solution, because I'm going to ask you this. What can we do? I'm going to offer the first one. Go with what you know and work with it. And the way I'll say it is this: if you know you saw somebody's child who works late nights and doesn't know what's going on, instead of you sitting back in your window peeking out your Venetian blind slots and talking about it, get out there and have a private conversation with that person. And you know that person's initial reaction is going to say no. Have a couple of videotapes. If you're going to be an old person trying to learn technology, to be nosy with a person. That's the way I see it. Sometimes nosiness is your best friend. Because they saw everything. They knew there was raccoons when it should have been dogs. So, you know, that's the things that we need to get. We need to understand that we have talked about it. We have talked about it. We have said it. We have Facebook. We have tweeted. We have Instagram. White people don't want us to do nothing. We are broken and disgusted and messed up with ourselves because we have turned on ourselves because we were too scared to turn back on them. So we are broken and messed up. What are we going to do about it? Let's see. We blew ourselves up. Let's see how many pieces are still left in the breeze to start something with.
Mm-hmm.
Take your head out of, I don't work, I don't do coupons. My man got two jobs, nonsense.
because we need to take every little bit we could get, put it together, use our brains and teach our kids to look past what's right in front of them. Teach our children that it's not for us to hate each other because we're light-skinned, dark-skinned, small-lipped, large-lipped. It doesn't matter. Teach these adults that you dropped the ball, so stop trying to act like the monsters you think are monsters. It's not part of something you did. And ladies and gentlemen, clearly, if there's more than one person telling you that they saw your kid doing several different things along the line you didn't allow, you need help. It's better a village than the cops to come get them, especially in this day and age.
You know, the irony, Katie, is when I worked with adjudicated youth and young students who were considered at risk, which is another way of saying that this is the last chance for you little black and Latino kids before we throw you away and lock you away in the system. What I learned is as rowdy as those children came in, as rough as they may have been, and I'm talking about I had children who had blocks where they controlled those entire communities and neighborhoods and people looking to them. I had a young brother with that had a screensaver on his phone that showed about $50,000 worth of cocaine and all sorts of things on his table with guns and everything. So, you know, but when these young brothers and sisters came to that program, the thing I learned is that they wanted direction. They wanted boundaries. They needed for somebody to step up and say, yo, y'all need to slow down. And they needed to see it from a place of love. And I'm sorry, you was about to jump in. Go ahead.
No, I said, yep. Sorry about that. You know me. I have my little church moments.
Well, see, and I think that's where it needs to start, because when we start talking to our children, we can't come to them as if we've been there the whole time for them. Our children know that we're full of, you know what? You know what I'm saying? They know that a lot of times we are the reason they're in the predicament that they're in now. And we have not taken the time and opportunity, for one, to apologize to them for the situations that we have not produced for them. They come out their houses. They look around their community. They don't see anything that we own that they can call their own. They come out their homes. And they walk into a school district, to a school building, and they don't see anything in there that's reflective of their accomplishments, their history, or anything that shows them that they can be great. They go to church. It is ironic because I was just looking at a picture of unfortunately, it was a picture of a mother out of Chicago who just lost her last child to violence, to street violence. But in that church, in that funeral, I look on the wall, and it is the Picasso picture. I'm not Picasso, but the Leonardo da Vinci version of the final, the Last Supper, hanging above the altar. So, you know, I'm saying they're looking at us like, yo, what are we coming out here for? We're dealing with the world, the situation that's not for us. And you could have done more to present something for us. And then when I come home, I got to deal with all the extra drama and stress, you know, just to,
absolutely.
And where are you? You're not protecting us, you know. And honestly, we're not protecting our children. So, what do they owe us? You say they owe us respect. Why should they respect some people who are afraid of their own shadows? You know, why do they need to respect the fact that? I mean, listen, individually, yes, we can say yes, I've done this, I've done that. But collectively, we have to look at the fact that our community is in shambles. And it was our responsibility to at least start building towards something so that they would have something to look forward to. I mean, the reason why the village isn't there is because we let the village die. And we're trying to rekindle the village, and the kids who are running the streets now are saying to us, whoa, 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 you can't just pull up on us with all this after we've been out here struggling all this time. You can't just tell us what to do. Where was you when this, that, and the other happened to me? Who was protecting me when somebody was trying to molest me? Who was protecting my sister when I had to come in and fight my mother's boyfriend because he was trying to rape her? You know, these are the things that we deal with. So when you walk up to that kid on the street and he's out there smoking a cigarette like he's 40 and he's only 14, you have to keep in mind that this isn't your average young boy. These cats have been through something, and it's up to us to help them heal. But first, we must humble ourselves and acknowledge that we are directly responsible for them being in the condition they're in today.
Drop the mic, dude. Drop the mic. That is the first and most wonderful summary statement of it all. We have a problem with accepting the responsibility. We want to deflect from the elephant in the room. And it's not always the racism. It's our own internal breakdown, our own internal self-inflicted bullets, our own stuff. Us. What before they could do something to us, we first had to give them a way in. And I'm sorry, everybody wants to keep saying it's just we're conditioned. We're conditioned, but we have our own eyes as well. I can understand where our initial reaction will come from, but we are given choices now, every day, new stuff. Every day, new stuff. We get new feelings. We get new angers. We get new joys, new outrages. We are the ones that have to make the choices on which way to turn around and deal with it, accept it or reject it. It's us. And I'm sorry, if your own damn kids don't motivate you to get out of your own selfish funk, we have no damn chance of doing nothing. A damn thing. Because I know usually a parent, no matter what it is that they're not used to or they don't like to do, they don't like to ask for help. When they're looking at their kids crying with hunger, usually if they know that right down the block they got a sister they don't get along with, but she has a little money and she's not a mean person, they would take the garbage to get some money to help out with their kids for that moment. I have been in that situation plenty of times and recently once. Where something out of your control has happened and you feel like, you know what, I'm not going to ask nobody for nothing because I could walk out there with my bling and just say what, make it look like I'm not hungry. You got bling and your kids got starving, rumbling stomachs. Because you're too proud to let the white man know that, yes, what they did, they succeeded with, but we got a way to do other things. And we're too silly to say, regardless of what they did, we still got each other. You guys on the panel know exactly what I'm talking about when I say that. Yeah. What it really means to know that you have a true network of your own people standing behind you saying, listen, no. If one of these kids in this neighborhood goes hungry, then we all failed. There is a panelist that's been waiting that I just realized, and I'm sorry. Let me bring them in. Hello, welcome to the show, caller.
Hi, Sadie.
Oh, Arlene, I'm so sorry, Mama.
Hello, Arlene.
Hi, panel.
Hey, what's going on,
Arlene? I'm just taking it all in, and everybody has made some really, really valid points, but I want to be honest, and I want to let you know what had me in the position it had me in. First of all, depending on where you live, Mama ain't sitting at the window, and neither is Grandma, because they scared they might get shot. A stray bullet might come through the window. It's happened many a times. That's one of the fears. The second fear is that we have such a big barrier between us. The older people are stuck in their way. Midstream people are stuck in their way. And the young people are stuck in their own way. That's three different ways. What is acceptable now was not acceptable before. So that has also changed. What is acceptable and what is not. And because we let it get away from us for so long. And we let it get away a long time ago. So as a result of the time that's involved, there's an even bigger barrier. When we could have done something, we didn't. And as a result of that, it took a whole nother turn. So now our children are openly talking about sex, their events, their activities. They're looking in an elderly woman's face or elderly man's face, saying how good the sex was the night before with their same-sex partner. And, you know, it's just gotten so far away that a lot of older people really just don't want to be bothered. Whatever life they have left, they want to just live it, and that's it. Now, people that are in our age bracket, we may feel a little different from somebody who's 70 or 65, and see, that's where the jewels are in our elderly. That's where all of the jewels are. And we can't give them the jewels like grandma would give them. You understand? Like our grandparents. Our jewels are different from their jewels. Our wisdom is different from their wisdom. So whereas a 75-year-old lady, I don't care how hardcore you are, a 75-year-old lady will take you under her wing and teach you something. Come here, son. You know what I mean? And they might listen. But now it's like a woman of my caliber, because I don't look my age, and a lot of us are starting to look younger and younger and younger, so they don't equate age with certain adults. They think we one of these young girls running around here trying to check them on something. You know what I mean? So the attitude is different. And approach is everything. How you approach these kids determines what's going to happen. If you come out on them where they feel like they're under attack, even if it's verbal, that wall is going to come up and you are not going to penetrate it. And you might even lose your life as a result of it, because these kids are very violent. And that's another thing that fear. Because right in the area where my sister lived, not far, they were selling drugs in the laundry. The guy said, "Hey, man, come on. This is a place of business. You know, why are you selling drugs? Y'all got to go." Man, they walked out of there, came back, shot him 15 times. So when people hear stories like that, that alone puts more fear. See, me, we going to go one day if whatever happens. So I'm just daring like that. You know what I'm saying? But everybody is not.
I'm going to allude to two things that you said. A, first of all, I agree with everything you just said. Okay? I agree with it. We see it. But A, the elderly are absolved, in my opinion, of having to try to do a damn thing. They didn't drop the ball. We did. The elderly deserves us to pick up our damn responsibilities, do what we should have done. Now it's going to be a harder fight to do it. It's more mess to clean up, absolutely. But the elderly deserves us to do what they taught us to do and get up. And they went through, I think, even worse fears than we did. Because nowadays we got knucklehead of our own doing it. They had people that they had nothing to do with that had done everything to enslave them, and still, after they were free, continued to treat them like they were slaves. And they still did it for us. So as far as I'm concerned, it's our damn job to pick it up and do it through our fears. That's my first thing. The second thing is, that's one of the solutions. You have listed every damn thing we know. Every damn thing that is. Everything is the way it is. That is what we let it be. That's what we got to deal with. It's our damn bed. We got to make it up. Of course we're not going to walk up and go talk to, you know, Slick Rick on the corner with the 15-cut diamonds and the 16-barrel gun. Like we the popo in their mind. But we damn sure going to try to speak to that kid that is looking at Slick Rick with the big cut diamonds and the popos and the this, thinking it's a glamorous damn life, and show him something different. It ain't easy. Everybody thinks I'm talking like I've got some damn magic trick up my sleeve. It's a magic wand. I've got 7 kids I've got to look at every day and be scared for. I've got 1-year-old that goes to a damn bus on the way to a trip with their mom to a doctor's office and got junior high school kids sitting there thinking it's fun, the harder you can make them cry or make the most fun of them. I've got a 16-year-old son that's tall and likes to wear hoods and has his hair all in some crazy thing because he prefers braids or his hair to look wild that I have to be worried about going from here to a school that some white cop might say, just like they told his mother, he was just picked out of something that they won't identify and shoot him. So hell no, I'm not sitting here talking like I've got some magic wand up my damn sleeve. I'm talking from being tired. Tired. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of seeing my children go out there and have to be talking to other kids who feel like there's no hope. While some big, grown 54-year-old man whose right it is and obligation it is to do his part is sitting up there sagging with him.
Yeah, but see, that's what I'm saying. That's my point, Katie. What was not acceptable before is acceptable now.
I'm not going to be looking at them anymore. You know something? I think Laquay Jewell and Professor Jones and Patrick at one point in a previous segment kind of said the same point in different words. I'm no longer going to try to look out and see who it is I should pick out being afraid of or pick out worrying about talking to. I'm going to pick up a broom and start sweeping the damn mess. And then I'm going to see why everybody's sitting there talking, I don't know why she's cleaning that yard up for. That yard has been that way for years. Nobody else, all they're going to do is come and throw another bottle.
Because that's the
attitude. And as soon as they start seeing that, wait a minute, that has land underneath all that garbage. Watch how somebody else will not go, you know what? Yeah, let's just pick it up, man. And then I'm going to have all those people turn around and say, they thank me later. It may not be a big thing. We're never going to overcome this nonstop master plan. Because even when it backs off a little, they'll think of something to do again. So what are we going to do? Sit around and not live, not breathe?
Oh, of course not.
Let our kids go to hell because we're sitting here? No. Enough with the garbage. We know. You know what? Let's stop talking about what we're going to do and what we need to do. Now let's start doing it. This show will still be here for everybody to talk about what just came up. But guess what? I'm sick and tired of saying it. Y'all know it. You hear it. You know what's going on. Make up your mind. You want to see your daughters get killed, raped, knocked up, messed up, emasculated, because you know what? Now your guys are girls, your girls are guys. You want to sit there and act like you didn't see it? You want to pretend that elephant isn't doing his trunk song in the middle of your room? Enough. Whatever little bit I can do until my breath is no longer, I'm going to do.
I agree. Okay?
Everybody wants to make fun of the fact that I've got a large family. Well, guess what? I've got a whole army to start with in my own community. All biologically mine. I've got a whole village of my own, and I still continue to sit there and tell the next person's kid in the park that they shouldn't be calling little kids a bully because I'm bigger than them. How would they feel if I did it? You don't have to walk up and lose your disdain and tell a kid, you know what, you're just a badass. I'm not going to tell those badasses nothing. You could walk up and make that kid, who everybody's labeled a badass, feel like you feel he still deserves being spoken to with a little bit of respect. And see how that does for you.
Yeah, because, well, you would be surprised, and then maybe you wouldn't because of the type of person that you are. How many kids really do want somebody to give them some guidance? It's just when they're around their peers, they have this image that they want to uphold. So what I do, and everybody don't have the gift that you have, Katie, and the gift that I have because I've been, and the gift that a couple of other panelists that work with children on a one-on-one basis. It's not easy to communicate with the kids. And if you're not on top of your game or if you're not around children a lot where you could get a feel of their jargon, and like he said, you need to learn how to talk to them. You need to learn their jargon. A lot of people are not even going to take time to do that. But what I do is when I see the kid that's acting the baddest, that's the one I target.
And that's the one I separate. Come, let's walk over here so that way he don't feel like I'm trying to embarrass him or humiliate him or anything like that. And then I school him and I say, listen, baby, you know, and like I said, it approaches everything. And I tell him, listen, baby, you know what? There's a whole world out here that you haven't even seen yet. And if you keep going the route that you're going, you won't see it. They want you to mess up. They want to put a bullet in your head. They want you to go to jail. They want you to be a deadbeat dad. They want you to, you know, and I talk real talk, and I'm not sugarcoating nothing. You're a black man. You got issues already. And you don't need to compile them with unnecessary issues. So you can go over there and tell your homeboy that you told me to go school myself or that be whatever. You could go over there and tell them whatever you want. But when you in my presence, I would appreciate very much if you respect my position. You understand?
Exactly.
And a lot of people,
a lot of people can't do that.
So, you know what I'm saying? They high-headed, they get angry, and they frustrated, so they come at them like that, and that's how they don't penetrate. You can't penetrate them like that.
That comes from a rapper, doesn't have a... And when you do try to get where our children obtain these downloads from, it's very hard to find out that somebody uploaded the clean version of the song. The thing is that my children like to play it on the loudspeaker. And I tell them, no, your mom's in the room. You don't get loud with me when I play with my 40-something, 50-something friends. Oh, come on, mom, this is the only thing. It's 2014. You guys know what I say? I ask them, which year would you like me to say it is in this house once again? I could go up a year, it could be 1990, but it's going no further than that. Take that off the speakers. When you go out with your little friends, I can't stop you. I could tell you that I don't want that to be said, but you're not going to play that for your little brothers and sisters in my house, nor are you going to sit here and we're going to sit at a table and party and box this together.
I hear you.
That's how we could start it. I'm not your equal. You're not mine. The way I remember it, I gave birth to you, not the other way around. We could be cool, but we'll never be friends. All right, guys, we have to go sign off tonight. I want to thank you guys. As usual, intriguing panel. I want to thank every single one of you because every one of you on this panel has been a wonderful network to me in all aspects of the word. And those of you who are there know what I'm speaking about. And every bit, from talking about something that bothered me with a topic, just talking about a caller that called in that kind of said something that did whatever, to talking about what you have felt and seen in your neighborhoods, what disturbs you, to talking about what we're frustrated with and what we need to do with. I'm just the one, I guess, that screams it out loud like a maniac. But I thank every one of you for letting me know that there is truly still that village that raised children and has each other's back. Because if I don't understand it before, I understand it with you guys and for all of you that's made this possible. So until tomorrow night, everybody, be blessed. Be a blessing. Make a difference. Continue to do what you do. Let them know that they still deserve respect, even through all their craziness, because they're allowed to make mistakes in order to learn the successes. So God bless you all, everybody, and I'll see you here tomorrow.
Okay, good night. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
On the edge, we'll talk about real issues.